Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to a brand new Arsblog Arscast right here on arsblog.com. Hope you're well. I am behind schedule. Normally, at this point on a Thursday evening, I kind of have everything done. Well, not everything, but a fair bit of it done. So this is the time when I sit down and I take all the bits that I've done here, done there, and I lovingly mold those bits into the audio cake that you get every Friday morning. And it's a beautiful cake. Some weeks more beautiful than others, but it's there. It's, you know, it's got piping and it's some icing and some decorations and all kinds. And at this moment in time, I've got some melted butter and a bit of flour. And that's about it. So I'm on the verge of panic, you see, especially because it's been a really quiet week. Not a whole lot has been going on from an Arsenal point of view. We won against Borough, and that's it. That's really been it all week. Nothing's happened. The chaps are in good form. There's no scandal, no crisis, nothing controversial involving the Arsenal team or Arsenal fans doing things they shouldn't be doing things that nobody should be doing on metros and that kind of thing. Well, I would say, given the amount of people that listen to this particular podcast, that there are some of you out there who have, during the course of this week, done things that you shouldn't have done. Sitting there now going, he knows. I don't know the specifics because you didn't do it in public in front of a camera. And frankly, I don't want to know. Because it could be anything. When you run the gamut of the human race. No, it could, you know, but you're out there and you know what you did and what you shouldn't have done. But that's fine. That's for you to live with. I'm not here to criticize. I'm just making a general point. We haven't been doing things that, you know, cause great shame on our football club or football in general or the human race. And well done to you and to all of us for not being racist. Keep it up. That's the way it should be. It's quite simple as well. It's not like it costs you a great deal to not be racist. All you have to do is not be racist. It's like not that difficult. It's like I'm not a serial killer. At all. Very easy not to be a serial killer. First step in not being a serial killer is not killing anyone. Like the first one. Because once you kill the first one, you're sort of starting down that road. Maybe it's a one-off. But who knows? You might get a taste for it. By killing that one person, you could awaken something in yourself and you could become a terrible, terrible serial killer person. And all you had to do to not be a serial killer was not kill anyone. And it's quite easy to not do stuff. That's the thing. Generally speaking, not doing something is a lot less effort than doing stuff. Most of the time, you have to make an effort to be something or do something. But doing nothing, that's easy. Just kind of sit there. For ages. Sometimes there isn't enough time in the day to do all the nothing that I want. But anyway, so that's why it's been pretty quiet. Pretty quiet. I did notice some controversy during the week involving a chap from a particular radio station. They're clever, aren't they, these people that wind people up for a living? Because they know that they're going to get a reaction from people, that it's almost like a virus. Because one person reads their shit and then goes, oh my God, this is terrible. I can't believe that person wrote that. They don't just sit there on their own in their house and say that. That would be fine. But no, they have to put it on Twitter and Facebook. And then people go, who said what? And they'll say, this guy said this. And then other people read it and go, God, I can't believe that. That's terrible. That's so awful. Then they read it and they tell everyone how outraged they are by it. And then more people read it, more people are outraged. And the only way that these people will cease to have an effect is by nobody sharing what they do. But the difficulty is, well, I mean, let's just say, hypothetically speaking, there was a columnist out there called Madrian Purim. For example, just taking a name at random from nowhere. And let's say he wrote a whole pile of shit all the time about Arsenal or the football club that you support. And it's deliberately provocative, deliberately designed to get people wound up, deliberately designed to get people to react, therefore spread the word, the horrible word. The problem is that you can't tell people to ignore this Madrian Purim guy without mentioning him. And then when you mention him, they go, why do I need to ignore him? And the answer is, well, just ignore him, generally. But no, why specifically should I ignore him? And then you might have to say, well, he wrote this thing. And they'll say, well, what's the thing? I want to see for myself if I should be really hacked off about this. No, honestly, you don't want to read it because, seriously, it's stupid and it's really badly written. And, it's really basically just dense. And they'll say, well, no, I have to see it. And then they'll search it out. And then they'll go, oh, my God, I can't believe this. Everyone, look at what this guy wrote. And then it just continues. So they're sneaky cunts, those guys. They know the more idiotic they are, or the more provocative they are, the more people will spread their verbal diarrhea. It's not verbal, though, is it? It's written. What's that? Written diarrhea? Linguistic diarrhea? No. But you know what I'm saying here. And for those people that hold out some vain hope that at some point somebody will say, you know what, in order to have a column in a national newspaper and a website, the person should be able to write properly, use the English language correctly, think coherently, and not be a complete dick. Those days are long gone. Long gone. I was looking at the Arsenal Twitter takeover today, earlier on. It was a slow news day, and I've just blocked all these sites, but I was just astounded that there weren't a string of stories based on a few tweets, questions that were asked of the Arsenal players. Chuba Akpom, he likes pepperoni. Lauren Koscielny thinks Lionel Messi is good at football. That's the kind of shit we're into. My advice, such as it is, would be to consume, if you must consume the linguistic diarrhea of these people, is to do it via the medium of the Football 365 Media Watch column. Because what that does is it gives you the choice cuts. No, there's no N missing there, but it gives you the choice cuts of what these people write, but they put it in a context. And usually the context is something that person has written a few weeks previously, which is completely at odds with what they've written today, for example. They contradict themselves all the time. Because all they're doing is just making up shit as they go along. So the best way to be outraged, if you must, is when that person is being eviscerated by another column. And if you're really, really, really outraged by what they write and what they do, the best way to deal with that is A, don't read it, and B, don't spread it. So there you go. And I'm sure that if this Madrian Purim guy ever came to life, ever became a reality, something we had to deal with, I'm sure we would just ignore it for the ridiculously idiotic nonsense that it is. It goes back to what I was saying earlier. All you have to do is do nothing. Don't read it, don't spread it. That's easy. Just sit there like this. And that's just a 5-second sample of doing nothing. It was really easy. You should try it. And it has a tremendous effect on all kinds of things. There's a bit more. See, it's brilliant. It's really easy. I should release a CD collection like that guy who teaches you how to speak all the languages. Is it Michel Thomas or... I can't remember, but I remember getting his CDs when I went to live in Spain first. And it was like 6 or 8 CDs and you'd listen and repeat and make notes and learn the language. I could do a 12 CD set on doing nothing. There it is. That's the whole 12 CDs there. I'm just going to loop that last bit. This is fucking genius. But look, it would be unfair for me to do nothing for the rest of this podcast because I know you're expecting some stuff and Arsenal chatter, and I think we'll do that right now by welcoming our guest this week. He is the presenter of The Breakdown on Arsenal.com, former Arsenal player and everything. It's Adrian Clark. Welcome back.
Hello, Andrew.
Let's start with the FA Cup draw. It could have been kinder, it has to be said, but I suppose it's the way of a cup competition like this. Along the way, you're going to have to play a big team somewhere sooner or later, and this, if Arsenal come through it, could be a very very handy quarterfinal if you get rid of somebody like Manchester United.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it's an exciting opportunity. Look, my heart sank, I think, like most Arsenal fans, when Roy Hodgson pulled us out of the hat away at Old Trafford. That wasn't great news initially. We'd all have wanted Reading or Blackburn at home. But, yeah, it's a great opportunity. And look, when I look at our squad and I look at the way Manchester United have been playing, there isn't anything to be afraid of. And it's been a long, long time since we turned United over in a match that mattered. And I think this is a great opportunity. And having been to Manchester at the Etihad and put in a really brilliant performance, more of the same, and I think we'll go through.
Would it be fair to say that perhaps 8 weeks ago, this would have been a much more daunting prospect, but over the last couple of months, Arsenal have been not only getting better results, but playing better football.
Yeah, we found our groove, haven't we? I think in the first few months, it was a bit stodgy. We were picking up points, but we weren't convincing or playing fluently. Mm. But it's clicked. I don't know what happened. The Southampton defeat on New Year's Day seemed to wake everybody up, and Francis Coquelin coming into the team, I think, transformed us. And yeah, the last few weeks, we've been managing to get our key men, our chief creators, the Ozils, the Cazorlas, the Rosickis, we've got them into the game, haven't we, all the time?
Yeah.
And they're tearing teams apart, and I think that's just lifted everybody, and it's given the whole team a lot more confidence. I think also it took a long time for that, you know, the 4-1-4-1 system that I think it's been a bit of a slow burner. Now I think the team are comfortable with it, maybe because we've got the right personnel in there. It just seems to have all come together. We're still not quite consistent enough. We still have the odd off day like White Hart Lane, but I think we're improving.
Yeah, I mean the first half of the season, the first half of the of where we are now, I suppose, in terms of the season, was unconvincing. And I think what was most frustrating about it was that most people felt it was kind of unrepresentative of the quality of the squad. Mm. But there were obviously issues that we suffered with when you look at players who'd been away at World Cup, a back four that was not at all consistent in terms of the team selection because of injury to Lauren Koscielny, and that goes back to the need to bring in a defender perhaps in the summer. But with the addition of Gabriel, with the emergence of Francis Coquelin, with Mesut Ozil back from injury, Theo Walcott back from injury, Olivier Giroud playing as well as he has, Santi Cazorla playing so well, there seems to be real balance in the squad now. And I'll also include a couple of the players who left, who went out on loan, have left the squad not quite as top-heavy as it was.
I know. Well, I wrote a piece earlier today just saying how confident I am that we can finish at least third. And a lot of that confidence comes from balance, the balance of the squad. I think it's right now. We've got, you know, key men fit. You've got to consider that Mesut Ozil has played less than half the season. So Giroud, Walcott, Wilshere. These are key players that have missed a large chunk of the campaign. But yeah, no, I look at our squad now and it's got real depth, hasn't it? We literally do have two quality players in each position with some left over. I picked two 11s earlier today and I couldn't find a space for Flamini, for Podolski, for Joel Campbell, Tchouaméni, guys like that. So that shows us, I think, how the squad has improved. I think we're in good shape. I really do. It's taken a while to get going this season. And there's obviously the team need to do the business at the business end, but I think we're shaping up all right. And actually, given how bad our injuries were earlier in the season and how our fixtures were quite heavily loaded towards the first half of the season in terms of difficulty, I don't think we're in an awful spot. We want to be leading the table, but yeah. I actually think we're in touching distance of second and third. That's not too bad considering.
Yeah. And the type of football that we're playing has certainly improved as well with these guys back. And I think there's obviously a physical benefit to having guys back in the middle of the season or after four or five hard months of the season who haven't played a great deal. So you've got Walcott and Ozil and Giroud, I think, is one of those players who's seeing some reward of that in terms of the physical aspect of the game and maybe the energy that they can bring.
Yeah, well, no one's jaded, are they? That's the upside of all these injuries. I looked at it for a piece I was writing, and only three players have played 70% of our Premier League season, and that's Mertesacker, Cazorla, and Alexis. So, you know, when you think about it, we've got a lot of fresh guys, and as you say, I think we didn't want the injuries, but the rest, in a way, seems to have done Giroud and Ozil good. Those two in particular are really shining and eager to make up for lost time. And I think maybe when Jack Wilshere comes back, hopefully that soon, we'll see something similar from him too. So, yeah, there is an upside to this disastrous injury-ravaged campaign we're having. And, yeah, it might... Luckily, we've had the depth to cope with it. Because we've got fresh players, it might just give us that impetus to get over the line and finish comfortably. I don't want us to be stressing out over fourth place on the last day of the season again. I'd like to see, I know we didn't last year, but I'd like to see us really cement our place, you know, third place pushing for second.
Yeah, I think we'd all enjoy that. It'll do our blood pressure and the graying hair and everything. It'll do us some good. I just want to touch on a couple of players. Olivier Giroud have mentioned there a couple of times, but since his return from the injury, the bizarre injury that he picked up against Everton, he's been playing really, really well. I think he's got 8 goals since he's come back from that injury. He's got 7 in his last 10 games, and he just looks a much more complete centre forward. And one of the things that struck me is how much more focused he appears to be on the game, in that he used to be a player who was perhaps easily distracted and easily put off by opposition centre halves who gave him a rough time, who gave him a bit of a kicking. And the reality is, look, you can sit in the ground and you can complain about it, or you can get up and get on with it. And I think the sort of getting up and getting on with it is standing him in good stead.
Definitely. And he had time to think about that when he served his suspension, didn't he, over New Year, when I thought the team really missed him.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Sealy red card. It was that was the red miss moment, and I reckon he sat down and thought, you know what, I need to calm down, and maybe that spell on the sidelines made him analyse his game a little bit more. He saw how Danny Welbeck made a good impression, let's be honest, while he was away up front, and I think that again maybe refocused his attention. But yeah, no, he's a good player. He's rounded. I loved the way he held the ball up in the last game. I thought it was terrific. Turned into a real team player, and I also think he's benefiting from having Ozil, Cazorla and Alexis all in the same side together, because those guys are really getting in support of him. Whenever the ball's going forward, he's got at least two of those three in at making angles off of him, and that makes life so much easier for a centre forward. But yeah, he looks more confident. He looks to have improved. The manager's been bigging him up, hasn't it? I think he is the number one at the moment, clearly. But he knows that he has to keep this up, otherwise Danny Welbeck will get back in.
Very true. And there's a real variety now to the way that Arsenal can attack. If last season we were a bit predictable, when we didn't have Walcott, when we didn't necessarily have options like Welbeck, like Alexis, with the kind of pace and movement that we have right now. And the way that Arsenal are set up going forward seems to be quite fluid in a way, because if you look at the team selection against Borough on Sunday, and I don't think it's one that he's going to be able to replicate week in, week out, but when you can play Alexis, Ozil, Santi Cazorla, Danny Welbeck and Olivier Giroud in the same team, you know, I know it was 2-0, but it felt like a much better performance than the scoreline suggested, that Arsenal looked as if they were playing not necessarily in cruise control, but if they needed to, they could have gone up another gear, and they had the ability and the quality in the side to do that, which wasn't there last year.
Yeah, it was really top class against Borough, I thought. But yeah, in the home games where we are favourites, where you know the opposition are going to let you have a lot of the ball, why not just unleash your talents, your strikers and top forwards all together and see if you can wreak havoc. And I think that worked. But yeah, as you say, it's about balance. In home games, we've got the option to play on the counter-attack or dominate teams now, because we've got pace. When Theo was missing last year and the Ox was injured as well, we didn't have that speed, did we? But yeah, the acquisitions are all quick. So that means now we can actually afford to sit off, let other teams have it, and then hit them in the spaces they leave behind. And we didn't have that up our sleeve before. So I think, yeah, the teams come to Emirates and even when they entertain us, they're not quite sure how we're going to approach it. And I think a lot of fans, especially the Arsene Wenger critics, will have said that we only had one way of playing, but that's definitely not been true this season. We've mixed things up pretty well, I think. At the right times, we've played defensive counter-attack stuff, and when we've needed to, we've had to, you know, pass our way through teams. We don't always get it right. I didn't think very good against Leicester. I thought that was a real sloppy performance, really, and that was mildly concerning. So I was glad to see the team put that right. We didn't get it right at Tottenham. I think we tried to replicate what we did at City. We didn't get that balance right. You can't just sit back and absorb pressure. You have to offer something the other way, and also close teams down in the right places. And yeah, hopefully we can do that at Old Trafford and well, this weekend against Palace as well.
Yeah. Santi Cazorla has has been just amazing to watch over the last 4 to 6 weeks. I love watching him anyway. Yeah. I just think he's an absolute joy to behold with a football. What he can do with his supposed wrong foot. It just, you know, it makes, it's astonishing. I know he doesn't have one, but I mean, he's a right-footed player, but you see him take corners with his left foot. You see him, he took a free kick in the 4th minute against Borough with his left foot, and Mesut Ozil standing over the ball. And that, you know, it goes to show you the quality that he's got in those feet of his. I mean, I think he's been a tremendous player for us this season. You mentioned earlier that he's one of the guys who's played the most, but certainly over the last couple of months, he's really, really stepped it up. And I think maybe he was somebody who people might have assumed was not expendable, but mm-hmm. whose place might have been in danger when you've got Mesut Ozil fit, when you've got Alexis Sanchez coming into your team for £30 million. Yeah. You know, it looked as if Cazorla was the guy who might make room for them to be in the team. Instead, Arsene Wenger is having to fit those other guys around Cazorla because he's playing so well. And what do you make of the way that he's been deployed in a slightly deeper midfield position?
Well, I thought he was brilliant in that deeper role against Middlesbrough. I thought he was outstanding. My issue with that is against the best teams, I'm not convinced he's got the defensive capacities over 90 minutes to be an orthodox central midfielder.
Yeah.
Not quite sure. If we were playing Chelsea, for example, I'd be worried that he'd get overrun or switch off you know, just once or twice. And against the best teams, that's too often. You have to really concentrate. But in matches where we're favourites, we could definitely deploy him alongside Coquelin or Flamini or one of the defensive guys, because you want him on the ball. And he got onto it so much more often than he ordinarily does in that deeper position. So that was great. And basically, Arsene Wenger has to play him at the moment because he's playing so well. But Aaron Ramsey, if he was fit, I'm not convinced would be getting into the team because he's been that good. And also the fact that this 4-1-4-1 formation, which we don't do every week, but it does allow the manager to play with two number 10s in effect, as long as one of them, that's often Cazorla, comes back and does a job defensively as well. So yeah, he seems to be reveling in it. Rosicki too, when he's had outings. But yeah, Santi is back, and when he is on song, like you say, he is just amazing to watch. I love him. And that cheeky side, that real confidence, when it shines through, you know that Arsenal are playing well as well.
I know that the way that he plays and the skills that he has, I won't say they're unique, but you know, he's got this low center of gravity, difficult to knock off the ball. He is remarkably good at turning either way, away from trouble in tight spaces. But perhaps what he does, even if he does lack a bit of that defensive ability, is what he does with the ball or how he attempts to play something that Ramsey and Wilshere should be looking at. Because both of them, obviously, players of great potential, but perhaps lacking consistency, and they're still very young players as well in the grand scheme of things, so there's no suggestion that they're, you know, I'm writing them off or anything like that. But could they take lessons from the way that Cazorla plays in that when he does get into space, he generally finds a simple pass, even if he makes slightly more difficult passes look simple, if that makes sense.
Kind of, yeah. I guess there are elements of Cazorla's game that Jack and Aaron wish they had. But also on the flip side, I would say that parts of Aaron's game and Jack's game, if Santi had them, then he would be just a real world-class midfielder. He'd be completely rounded because Jack, Wilshere and Aaron Ramsey have got that energy, the drive, a real snap in the tackle. That's not part of Santi's game. I think Santi's all about what he does on the ball. Although, at the Etihad, I remember most of the good things he did came inside his own half, where he won the ball and launched a counter-attack. So he's got it in his armoury. But yeah, I guess so. In terms of inside the final third, there aren't many players better than Cazorla anywhere. Ozil sees the pass like Cazorla, but Ramsey and Wilshere, yeah, they might need an extra touch, but most players would need an extra 3 or 4 seconds. Wilshere and Ramsey aren't too far behind Cazorla.
Crystal Palace this weekend, and with a new manager, things have been going slightly better for them. Always quite difficult against an Alan Pardew side.
It is, yeah, but you got to fancy our chances.
Yeah,
they won't make it easy. I think it's important that we stay disciplined. Don't give too many free kicks and corners away, because that's where they could cause us problems. Not sure who's going to play in goal yet, but if it's Ospina, they might target him. He's not the biggest, although he's been pretty confident coming out for crosses so far. So,
do you have any concerns over that side of Ospina's game?
Not really. I think I've seen the criticism of him, and I thought it was a little bit harsh, to be perfectly honest. I don't think he's done anything bad enough to warrant the manager changing it. And I think he's had some really good games. So, no, at the moment, he's playing well enough to keep the shirt, in my opinion. He's not perfect, but nor is Wojciech Szczesny, and not many keepers are, let's be honest.
Yeah.
They've all got slight flaws. So, I've no problems with Ospina being the first choice. Yeah, I think this one's all about concentration, being strong, really standing up to Palace early on. And then on the ball, moving it quickly, because if we move it slowly, because they will drop off, they'll put their banks of four up, and they'll say, come on then, break us down. It can be frustrating when that happens. If Arsenal move it quickly, they'll be fine.
Yeah.
So, and I think we can really hurt them on the counter-attack in this game, if they do come at us. That's why the first goal is important in this one. We get the first, Palace will have to come at us. When they come at us, that's when we'll be at our best, I think.
Yeah, and very briefly, midweek then, there's Champions League action, first leg of the round of 16 against Monaco. Is there any real advantage to playing at home first, or is there a disadvantage?
It's an advantage if you put them out of sight, isn't it? But, yeah, I don't know. I don't have a problem. We're playing very, very well at home, so I'd be confident of us winning that. But, yeah, it's just exciting to have the Champions League back. It was a good draw, let's be honest, and it's now down to the players to make the most of that draw. I think they'll be up for it, I really do, because in a way that they'll probably feel a little bit hard done by in recent seasons in the Champions League with the way they've gone out to top sides. So I think in this one, well, I'd like to think, they'll have a really steely look in their eye, a bit like what they had against Middlesbrough.
Yeah.
And try and get a nice two-goal cushion ahead of the away leg. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Champions League, it's good to be back. And it'd just be nice, wouldn't it, to get into the quarters or semi-finals. It seems like it's been a while since we were there.
It has been a while. That's why it seems like a while. It has been. But, I mean, you've got to look at the players that we have and look at the squad and look at the attacking capability that we have now and feel... I mean, other teams, you could see perhaps if they drew Arsenal are a name and have had this reputation, of course, down the years. But when other teams now look at having to face Mesut Ozil and Alexis Sanchez and the range of attacking talent, might it influence their mindset, perhaps, in the way that they set out?
Maybe. Monaco, they know all about Arsenal. They were Emirates, weren't they, in the summer? So, yeah, they've had long enough to kind of plan for this game. But, yeah, I think Arsenal have the respect of everybody. And if we did progress, I don't think that many teams would fancy us in the next round. And look, if we do go through, we could get a little bit lucky with the draw again. Let's say we drew someone like Porto. Then all of a sudden you're talking about we're favourites to reach the semi-finals, and it's those little fine margins. You just need that little bit of luck and to do the business. But yeah, I would still say we're a rung behind your Real Madrids and Bayerns of this world.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. It's a pretty high rung, and it might not be one that we can ever breach properly. I don't know. I'd love to think that we could get to that level in the next few years. But yeah, we're not quite at that standard, but we're only in the next category. So, and we've seen teams like Chelsea, who have not been the best team in Europe, go on and win it. So you never know.
All right. We'll leave it there, Adrian Clark. Thanks very much indeed.
Cheers, Andrew.
Thank you very much indeed to Adrian. You can find him on Twitter at Adrian J. Clark. Clark has got an E, so that's at Adrian J. Clark. And of course, you can see his reviews of the Arsenal games on the breakdown on the Arsenal website, which is arsenal.com, I think. No, .com. Yes. You'll find it there. So you will. So check it out if you haven't already. So, not much going on. Team news ahead of Saturday's game. That's tomorrow, by the way, if you're listening on Friday. If you're not listening on Friday, it could be today. And if you're listening sometime next week, man, you're way too late for this. Anyway, team news is that Matthew Flamini has got a bit of a tight hamstring. So he's a bit of a dad. Also, Hector Bellerin, he's got a wrenched flange, and he could also miss out. But Callum Chambers had a very good game, of course, against Borough on Sunday. He could fill in there, responding to the challenge that the young Spaniard has been providing with his lightning-fast performances. But Chambers has got a chance to fight back a little bit there. It's hard to know what sort of a team the manager is going to pick. Is he going to go hell for leather like he did against Borough in terms of picking all those attacking players? Will he bring Jack Wilshere back in, who's back in full training and could well get a game as a more traditional central midfield player? Will Santi Cazorla struggle physically against what Crystal Palace have to offer? And let's not forget that Palace also have Marouane Chamakh. They don't have Yaya Sanogo for this one, even though I think he's missing anyway because of a hamstring strain. Really is an Arsenal boy. But he wouldn't have been able to play anyway because he's on loan. So you're not allowed to play against the club that owns you when you go on loan to another club, just in case you score 5 or 6 own goals, because that's what professional footballers do all the time. Happens all the time when you don't have this silly rule to stop them playing against their old club. But anyway, that's the team news. We'll have to wait and see what kind of a selection the manager goes for. It's a game that if we really go for it, like to think we could win relatively comfortably. But of course, Alan Pardew's sides are always difficult enough to play against, and you know he'll be sending this Palace team out to have a good go at us. But I'm confident that we can cope given the form we're in. 18 games recently, we've won 14 of them, drawn 1. Lost 3. It's decent form. It's the best form we've been in for quite some time. So I hope that continues. And then obviously midweek, we've got Champions League action against Monaco. Monaco going very well in France, winning a lot of games, not losing a lot of games, not conceding a lot of goals either. But that was true of Middlesbrough. They weren't conceding a lot of goals and they were playing very well and they were top of their league. And I know it's not quite the same. The Championship and Ligue 1 are not quite the same in terms of standard. Championship's a little bit better. I'm kidding. French listeners, I'm kidding. Honest. But we'll have to wait and see. But that's cool. Midweek Champions League action. It's back. And it's exciting. And hopefully we can do something in this year's tournament beyond crashing out in the first knockout round, disappointingly. But hey, that's all in the future. One way or the other, we'll find out sooner or later. Now, considering the week that we've had, I'm off to do a bit more nothing. I suggest, if you're in work listening to this, doing a whole lot of nothing is probably the best way to go. It's a Friday. What's the worst that could happen? Unless your job is absolutely critical on you doing things. Like, you know, doctors and ambulance drivers and those kind of things. Where you do actually have to do something, otherwise terrible, terrible things happen. So if you're in that kind of an industry, just ignore me. We'll have an Arsecast Extra on Monday with James. We'll be looking back on what happened against Palace and looking ahead to the game against Monaco. But until then, have yourselves a great weekend. Take it easy. Cheers. Bye-bye.
You want to score with the birds. You want to smell like they want you to smell. Forget the deep sea or forest aromas. She wants vending machine coffee and late night kebabs. The smell of broadcasting success. You need stench. The new fragrance from Madrian Parham.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.